Hi folks, welcome to episode 82 of the Epochs of the Lotus Eaters. I am, as always, joined by Bo, and today we're going to be talking about something I know literally nothing about, which is the first emperor of China, Qin Shi Huang. Probably pronounced terribly. So before we start, I just want to explain why I know nothing about China, because basically when I was in my 20s and I started studying history for fun, it wasn't that I wasn't interested in Chinese history. It's just that as soon as I started looking into it, I was like, right, there's like an entire counterweight to Mediterranean history here. And it's as deep and broad and long as Mediterranean history, only I can't understand any of the names. So it was either one or the other that I had the time for. And I was like, well, I know what that name means, or at least I can pronounce it. These names are totally alien to me, and so I just let it slide. So I studied Mediterranean history, Western history, rather than Chinese history, and so that's why I know nothing about what happened in China, really.
No, I mean, it's fair enough, I suppose. It is effectively alien to the Western tradition, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, where I did always been fascinated by history since a small child, and then did it at undergrad, and it's a sort of part of my personality, whatever, being a history nerd and things. Mm. At some point, you realise, well, I do need to know something about Chinese and Japanese and Indian history and all that sort of thing. And so when it came to, well, I was in my 20s really, when I sort of started making a concerted effort to understand the sweep of Chinese history. Mm. The first emperor, it's Qin Shi Huang, Qin Shi Huang Di, maybe. I will talk about the names in a minute because I too will absolutely butcher probably every single one of these.
That's all right.
But there's no way around it because
I'll do it worse.
Just like where I even struggle, most people, Englishmen struggle with even French and German or even Scottish or Welsh words. Of course, going to absolutely get this all kinds of wrong. So you're just going to have to live with that. But I don't think we've got a fantastic amount of native Chinese watchers of the Lotus Eaters. So
possibly not.
But there you go. Yeah, Qin is Qin, for a start. But another thing, just very quickly to say on that, is to pronounce it properly, not only do you need to know sort of what it's supposed to sound like, but you've really kind of got to put on a Chinese accent to do it real justice. And that's more embarrassing than to me than just saying it. Like the Shi, it would be more like Xu or something. And I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to, you know.
That's the little French. You've got to put on a French accent to pronounce it, don't you?
Yeah, you do.
It's not the Bayeux tapestry, it's Bayeux. I'm not going to do that.
Well, I feel comfortable with things a bit like with French and things. I guess, but with Chinese, I'm just not going to do it. Yeah. And John, who works for us here, our producer, is from Hong Kong. And I've asked him a few questions about it. But he speaks Cantonese, not Mandarin.
Right.
Okay. And all this is sort of Mandarin stuff.
Right.
Okay. One of the questions I asked him is, what is the word for China in Cantonese and in Mandarin? Neither of them sound like our English word China.
Right.
It's just completely different sounding words.
So it's just...
So it's a Maya. It's a Maya. But yeah, Qin, because he's the king of Qin first and foremost.
And Qin is the people, right?
Yeah.
Like refers to an ethnic group.
Yeah, right, yeah. So there were like basically seven kingdoms.
Yeah.
And one of which was the Qin.
Right.
He was like the king of the Qin first and foremost.
Right.
And then his other names there, like Shi Huang or Shi Huang Di, that is a title, meaning first emperor.
Oh, right.
Or the first emperor.
Right.
But that's common, isn't it? Like Augustus's real name wasn't Augustus. Yeah. His real name is Octavian. Well, it just happens loads, doesn't it? Like all the popes. Our modern day Pope Francis, his real name's like George.
Yeah.
George. Or whatever. So anyway, so his real name was Ying Zhen.
Right, okay.
But I think I'll probably just to make it easier, because loads of these names are also, on top of everything else, quite similar sounding, at least to the Western ear, I'll just probably call him the Emperor a lot of the time.
Never get the hang of the names.
Right, yeah. And loads of them are really similar. And the place names as well, again, to the Western ear. A lot of them sound the same.
Yeah.
But that's just something you've got to get to grips with if you... So I am interested in Chinese history. And I think when you are sort of new to a whole sort of theatre of history, there's better or worse places to start. So for example, if you were new to ancient Roman history, the life and times of Julius Caesar or Augustus perhaps is a great place to start. If you're interested in medieval England, the Tudors perhaps.
Mm.
So for Chinese history, although it's not the beginning, nowhere near... Mm. The life of the first emperor is a great place to start. And I've gone over it a number of times in my life.
And this is the first emperor of a unified China as well,
that's
right? Because, of course, before then, it was a fractured area of various small kingdoms. Mm. Right.
couple of quick things to mention then. Where we're talking about China or United China, it's still way smaller than the modern China on the map, like way smaller. So that's one thing to mention. Another one is to say, to put it in its historical context, the first emperor's dates are about 260, 259 BC.
Mm-hmm.
And he dies in about, in 210 BC.
So it's relatively contemporaneous with Alexander the Diadochi and the rise of the Romans.
Yeah, a little after. I mean, it's really the Second Punic War. While this is going on, it's the Second Punic War.
Right, okay.
Because Hannibal is what, like 216, 217? They're the big battles in Italy for Hannibal anyway. So, yeah, whilst that's going on that the other side of the world.
Crazy period in Mediterranean history.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, they didn't really have any contact with each other.
No, no.
Although we
should do one talking about Roman and Chinese contact, because a few hundred years later, they did start having contact with each other.
Yeah, that's right.
And that's actually really interesting.
Yeah.
But we'll do that another time.
Famous story when some Romans went on basically what became the Silk Route.
Yeah.
And some eventually came back, maybe. But anyway, that's spoilers. A very interesting story, isn't it?
we'll do an episode dedicated to it, because it's really good.
So another thing I'd like to say, just super quick before we sort of jump into the details of his life and times, is to put it in a tiny bit more context. If we're talking the 200s BC, there's still like a couple of thousand years of documented Chinese dynastic history before that. And there's just so many, if you look at a list, you can find a list on Wikipedia or something of all the Chinese dynasties.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's like the Shi, the Shang, the Zhou, the Qin, the Han, the Tang, the Song, the Ming. It goes on and on and on.
Yeah.
And this is the Qin dynasty. It's actually really short. It doesn't last much after his death.
Right.
One of his sons, younger sons, has a quick go before he himself is deposed, and then there's a Quisling dude, and then it's over. So the Qin dynasty is actually quite short.
Kind of like the Sargon of Akkad, Akkadian dynasty, right? So it's only a couple of generations before it's all gone.
Yeah. Well, I find, in this sense anyway, there's a very obvious parallel with Alexander. Once the big man's dead, it's almost straight away. It's not with Alexander, it really is straight away. It's like day he dies, it all falls apart pretty much. It's not quite that, but it's very nearly that.
Right.
However, another parallel I think of sometimes whenever I go over his life is that though it was short, really short, not much more than his own lifetime, it was just really, really pivotal. Sometimes you get that, like Caesar and Augustus. What they did just set the tone for centuries and centuries and, in a sense, forevermore.
As in the Tsar of Russia being called the Tsar after a Caesar.
Yeah.
People are trying to recapture that primordial glory from the very first time that it was done.
Or even all through the Byzantine period or the later Roman period, you've got Augustuses and Caesars and all that sort of thing.
They all lay claim to the word becomes a kind of totem, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And it holds a majesty in men's minds, which is why they all scramble for it. No, I'm the Tsar. It's like, you're a Russian autocrat. What the hell are you talking about? Oh, this is the third Rome. It's like, what, Rome? What are you talking about? The Romans never came anywhere near here. You know, what are you blathering about, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm the Rome. Okay, fine. You know, it leads to like the 21st century where there's a Latin radio station in Finland. It's like, what are you doing? Romans had nothing to do with any of this, but they want, you know, anyway.
Well, like Caesar is a household word, really, almost. Yeah. Like if you know anything about ancient history, ancient Rome, you will know Caesar.
He's probably the most famous Roman.
Right. So there's something equivalent. There's something equivalent here that even though his dynasty wasn't very long lasting, what he did just echoes through the ages, echoes through eternity.
Not wrong.
We'll get into exactly why that's the story of his life, really, why it's so. I feel like, again, where I mentioned the Tudors, Tudor dynasty is not really that long.
No.
You've got Henry VII, Henry Tudor, Henry VIII, and his son, very briefly, and two of his daughters, but that's it. After Elizabeth is gone. That's really quite a fantastically long dynasty.
Let's get into it. You're really selling me.
Okay.
Come on. What happened then?
All right. So so let's start with his parentage a bit because his mother plays a big part in it.
Right.
In lots of Chinese history. In lots of Chinese history, the empresses and dowager empresses and things quite often play, and the important concubines and things often play a big role. This is no different.
Right.
His father, who was known as Prince Yiren, later became King Zhongzhang, he was just one of many boys from his grandfather, from the first emperor's grandfather, one of like over 20, I think. And he struck up a really important relationship with apparently quite a rich, quite a very successful, what would you call it, sort of merchant, someone of the merchant class, someone called Lu Buai, who is extremely important. He's extremely important, becomes like a regent sort of figure in the end. Anyway, this Lu Buai helps him ascend to the throne, because the grandfather actually only reigns for something silly like 3 days before he's himself assassinated. There's so many assassinations at this time in China.
Byzantine politics.
Yeah, really, really. Yeah. Well, that goes on all through the Three Kingdoms period, which is arguably probably one of China's most famous ancient periods, which is a couple of hundred years after this. So still in antiquity, like in the 180s, 200s AD, it's sort of the Three Kingdoms period. But even in this period, there's just everyone's backstabbing everyone and undercutting and all sorts of things constantly.
Yeah. It's interesting that roughly analogous to like Roman civil wars as well, like Constantine and various people like that. You know, it's like strange how these parallels keep coming around.
One of the ones I have in my mind is Charlemagne. It reminds me of Charlemagne, because Charlemagne had, again, sort of a massive empire he built for himself, and it falls apart pretty much on his death.
Yeah.
And, Charlemagne for me is a parallel, although you know, it's like 1,000 years later and on the other side of the world. But there you go, power's power. It sort of plays out in similar ways all the time.
Yeah, it is the kind of natural forces of governorship that we're looking at, isn't it? That's, you know, how these things play out. There's a predictable pattern that you can look for.
Yeah, absolutely. So this Lu Buai seems to be sort of an eminence grise or a power behind the throne or something. He's sort of, I hesitate to say kingmaker, but some
schemer.
Yeah, a great schemer.
Yeah.
And he
sort
gets
of Varys.
Yeah. He gets the prince Yiren to the throne of Qin. Mm-hmm. So I'll put a map up so everyone can see. Yeah. And there's sort of seven of these kingdoms, for want of a better word. And the most powerful ones are the Chu, the Qin, and the Zhao. They're sort of the three biggest and the three most powerful. And they've had a long period of battling amongst themselves where for like a couple of hundred years before this, where no one kingdom has been able to really get the full upper hand. And the first emperor's mother, Lady Zhao, is from Zhao. And at one point when he's a very, very little boy, almost a baby really, the first emperor is, in inverted commas, a hostage there.
But ancient hostages, not the same thing.
Kept quite well, but apparently not in the lap of luxury or anything, because he does harbour resentments, which play out later. But still not, you know, not kept in a cell or anything like that. Okay, but this Lady Zhao, or sort of, you could call her sort of a dowager queen, Zhao later, because at first, she was a concubine just of the Lu Buai chap. Apparently, she was ridiculously attractive.
Yeah.
Like a Helen of Troy type. You know, everyone agreed she was one of the most beautiful women you could ever see with your eyes.
What was Justinian's wife, Theodora, was it?
Justinian. Yes, Theodora. Yeah. She was supposed to be.
Yeah. Got to be careful of these remarkably attractive women who end up in powerful places, just saying.
Yeah. Well, it's a great or terrible combination to be where you're undeniably beautiful, and if you're ruthless as well, ambitious and ruthless and beautiful, can quite often be a recipe for great success and or disaster. Anyway, the Queen Dowager Zhao seems to have been that, because she was Lu Bai's sort of concubine in the first instance, but then when the king, the father of the first emperor, sort of sees her, he immediately wants to marry her and just does.
Yeah.
And she's pregnant sort of immediately or already. So this is one of the things. Is the first emperor, you know, is Qin Shi Huangdi the legitimate son of a king and a queen, or was he the illegitimate son of the Lu Buai character?
Right.
And the sources suggest it. Some say he just definitely was, and some say that's just a dirty rumour.
Yeah, but obviously we don't know.
So I'd like to pause ever so quickly here and mention the sources, because it is important, especially for real history nerds, at least one minute at least, just to say. The main sources really on this, because it's so far back, 200 BC is a long, long time ago, there's only a couple of great sources. One is, the main one is called The Records of the Grand Historian. The Grand Historian is Shima Qian.
What a great title. Yeah. The Records of the Grand Historian. Well, you know, he does what it says in the tin, I suppose.
Yeah, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
And the other one is the annals of Lu Bui himself, the spring and autumn annals, which is a reference to Confucius.
Right.
Because Confucius wrote about the spring and the autumn. And now, most of the main one, the records of the Grand Historian, date from the next dynasty, the Han Dynasty.
Hmm.
And they were enemies, ideologically and just dynastically,
they overthrew
of the Qin.
The Qin, didn't they?
Right.
So, of course, they're going to be... I don't want to say slanderous or anything, because that's not necessarily the case.
I mean, feel free.
No, but, I mean, they
some
may,
say they were.
They exactly. may well have been, but you, like, it's easy to say, well, because they overthrew them, they must have despised them and done everything they could to talk them down. It's like, maybe, but, like, you know, if it's written like 100 years after the event, maybe you don't need to do that. You know, maybe actually there's no particular threat of that dynasty coming back because they're all exterminated or something.
Mm.
And so do you need to... You know, who knows? I don't know, you know. Mm. It's not a necessary connection. You know, it could be, it might not be.
It's a fair point, and modern scholars, historians, do argue about exactly that. Mm. They think that, well, the first emperor was categorically not a devotee of Confucius, and the Han really were.
Right.
So they think when we get to it, the theme of Confucius, Confucianism, they think that almost certainly the later Han are casting shadow over the Qin, but on a lot of it, probably not. And then, of course, we've got the archaeology, and the archaeology does seem to back up loads of what's said in the records of the Grand Historian.
Okay, well,
like
good.
The Terracotta Army, that is the first emperor's burial place.
Oh, right,
that is
okay.
him.
That's very cool.
We'll get to that at the very end.
See, this is just my particular weird canard of being like, actually, I don't think everyone who wrote things down in history was a gigantic liar. I feel the need to extend a kind of compassion to them and be like, well, look, maybe they were trying to do their best, actually. You know, maybe they weren't just evil Machiavellian schemers who are like, no, I'm going to make history think this person was terrible for all time. You know, maybe they were just trying to do their best. You don't know.
Yeah. Well, just to back you up on that particular point, the Terracotta Army wasn't really discovered, unearthed, until sort of the 1970s.
Mm.
And until then, most scholars apparently had said that...
Oh, this
that,
is a lie.
Yeah,
they
didn't bury a whole army of clay and bronze, fake men. And then it's the archaeology, it's there, it really is there.
Yeah, it's just mean-spirited to be like, no, because we haven't found out you're a liar.
But we'll see, it's up to anyone that wants to read all this stuff to make up their own mind. Just, really, it's up to you.
Can't verify any of it, really.
I'm not going to try and tell you a categorical yes or no on these things. Present you with the details. So
the apparently legitimate son of the king, not the illegitimate son of Lu Bai. What does he do?
So the father dies. I think
which
natural
father?
Causes. Oh, sorry,
the king, right?
The king. Yeah. King
Zhongzheng. It's a Prince Harry situation. This isn't it.
Yeah.
Everyone's like, oh, yeah, he's definitely your son, but he does look a lot like Lu Bai.
Yeah, there's sort of a Captain James Hewitt situation going on.
Exactly.
he only has about 3 years on the throne himself, and then he dies.
Yep.
And so the first emperor, King Zhen, really, ascends to the throne, and he's only like 13 years old, which, although you grew up quicker in the ancient world, you had to, still 13 is quite young.
Yeah.
So Lu Bai becomes sort of a chancellor, a prime minister, a regent.
Some sort, yeah.
Something like that. And his mother is also sort of super powerful, the Dowager Queen, until he can sort of really start taking the reins fully for himself.
Yeah.
Okay, so in about the year 235 BC... so he's like, by the time he's about 20 odd, there's some sort of formal process where he's entirely got the cockpit of power, if you like, is entirely in his hands. And we see pretty much straight away that he's...
Before you know, I assume this is some sort of ritual anointing and ceremony and...
Yeah.
You know, right.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The whole nine yards.
Yeah.
Yeah. In that meantime, the Dowager Queen has become sort of a political a problem for Lou Boyer politically.
A liability?
Yeah, a liability. So wow. He fobs her off on apparently a eunuch.
What does she do?
Well, she's just sort of an endless schemer.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah.
Again, that might be a trope. You know, quite often it happens. That is a trope in history, isn't it?
But quite often it's a trope for a reason.
Right. And he doesn't really want, Lou Boyer doesn't really want the rumours that he's sort of cuckolded the old king in any sort of way.
Yeah.
So he sort of fobs her off with a character called Lao Ai. It becomes important in the first little stage of the first emperor's life. And he was apparently a eunuch. Turns out he wasn't a eunuch.
Oh.
Because he sires two children with her.
Oh.
Who would be the first emperor's half-brothers, right?
Weird to pretend to be a eunuch, isn't it?
Mm.
I suppose it gets you access to women you otherwise wouldn't have had access to.
Mm. And also, it said, without being too crude, that not only wasn't he a eunuch, he was fantastically endowed, should we say. Like, ridiculously. So there
maybe
you go.
Maybe he's ironically called the eunuch.
Right. But the fact he was allowed anywhere near the Dowager Queen, he had to pretend that he was a eunuch. That's how it goes. And so, by the time the first emperor sort of becomes king of the Qin in his own right, he realizes, and he is ruthless. He's absolutely ruthless. There's no two ways about that. He decides he just needs to kind of get rid of everyone that sort of could even kind of possibly undermine him in any way. And it seems that Lao Ai, his mother's lover, stroke eunuch, is going to be in the way.
Yeah,
I know, yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
Go on.
That he's going to be in the way, and he finds out, wait, what? They've got two illegitimate sons together, little kids. You know, 5 years old, 8 years old or whatever. And so Lao Ai realises that he's probably going to get executed. So he sort of pulls the trigger first and tries to start a rebellion.
Oh, right, okay.
Because he figures, you know, when you're painted into a corner,
well, I mean,
it's sort of his only...
This trick. Young king is going to kill you and your children.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
So apparently the story was he forged some documents saying that he can command a small part of the army.
Right.
Raises this small part of the army and tries to march on the imperial palace in Qin. But the first emperor himself hears of this and it doesn't really come to anything.
Right.
And Lao Ai is executed disgustingly. The thing of tying ropes around both your arms and legs and around your neck. And then tied to horses, and they run in different directions. So, yeah, gross.
That can't have been pleasant.
And he has every single member of Lao Ai's family killed. and the two boys, the two little boys strangled.
I knew it was going to be horrible.
Apparently one of the stories just had a slightly more horrible twist to it. Apparently before anyone realised exactly what he was going to do, he got the two boys, he had an audience with these two boys and said, if you were king, just imagine, if you were king, do you think you'd make a good king? And the little kid, the older of the two little kids, said, like, yeah, I think I'd make a good king. Apparently that just seals their fate in his mind. So, yeah, he has them killed.
That's awful.
Strangled with silk or something like that. Something classically Chinese.
Yeah.
As for his own mother, Lady Zhao, he exiles her. He just exiles her.
Okay, could have been worse.
Apparently he was perfectly within his rights to have her killed if he wanted to, but he did actually draw the line there.
Well, I mean, he's the king. I mean, there doesn't seem to be any limit on his power.
No, there really isn't.
So, yeah.
It's funny, actually, just to say there, for example, somebody like Caesar or Augustus, there's all sorts of moral limits on their power, isn't there? Like, you don't wear red boots. That's beyond the pale.
I didn't even know about that.
The kings of Rome, the old kings of Rome, like Tarquinius, would wear red boots.
Oh, right.
One time Caesar
was
seen wearing red boots, and everyone was like, oh, my God, you can't. Oh,
he's
my God,
he thinks
he's
gonna
a king.
Be a king. Oh, yeah. Mark Antony's offering him a crown. Oh, God, what's going to happen?
Yeah. There's none of that. In 2nd century BC Qin. No, you're just an absolute monarch in the truest sense.
I'm literally the divine representative here.
Yeah.
Like the pharaoh.
You've got a mandate from heaven. Yeah. They say that sort of thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is literally like I've been studying Völler, actually, and he talks about how ancient societies had these sort of views of the king being a kind of personification of a deity on earth.
Mm.
And that's, you know, that's what all the rituals and all the anointing is for. When you sit on the throne, you're anointed, you're personifying these spiritual forces. And so, I mean, if you're a peasant that believes this, well, what are you going to say? Yeah. So I'm not going to be heretical and tell the gods they're wrong. you know, I'm just going to kill this mother. Okay, fair enough. You know, I'm going to go back to farming my rice.
Yeah,
peacefully and quietly, like a good subject.
Yeah, it's not only treason, it's heresy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not only treason, it's heresy.
Yeah, that's above my pay grade, I'm afraid.
Exactly. The king is enforcing divine laws, you know. It's not my business. You know? I'm just farming my pigs, you know.
And so this Lu Bai, who's been sort of the power behind the throne in all sorts of ways for a generation or so, he's implicated in all this as well.
No kidding.
On some level. But because he is, if not the first emperor's father, at least his type of surrogate father anyway. And so he has, the first emperor does have some pity on him and only exiles him. And apparently that really was being clement. But what he does is within a couple of years, he paints him into a corner where he commits suicide.
Right.
And his own mother also, in fact, I've heard a couple of different things about the fate of his own mother, that Lady Zhao. Some say she lived for years and years and years before she died. And others say, I think, that she was dead within a couple of years as well, just because she sort of just politically needed to be out of the way. Her story needed to end. But anyway, they don't really make a massive reappearance on the scene of on the stage of history after that point. But where that Lu Bai is now out of the picture, the first emperor needs sort of another chancellor type, prime minister type, second in command person.
He needs someone to do the ministerial work.
Right, yeah. And so it was Lu Bai's second in command, his protege, that takes up the reins. And here's a character called Li Su.
Just before we go on, I just can't help but think of the just terrifying existence these people seem to have, constant paranoia and backstabbing and threat of being just brutally executed, and your whole family being brutally executed is just constantly every single day on the table. So you have got to make sure that you put every foot completely securely in the right place, or else boom, oh no, you've tripped wired something, and now the emperor's mad, and now he's having you killed and everyone you know killed. And you know, and the emperor's got sat there going, right, if I could kill him, but if I kill him, I mean, maybe this guy will kill me in my sleep. So everyone is living with this fundamental substratum of total insecurity about their own existence.
Yeah.
Like, what a horrible, like, Byzantine court politics, you know. So, like, and everyone's thinking, well, look, all I have to do is kill the emperor and then I've got all the power. You know, and it's, oh, God, what a terrifying world this is.
Yeah, sword of Damocles over nearly everyone's head at all times.
Yeah. And it's a very sharp sword of Damocles as well.
I don't know how I wouldn't be able to really live under that sort of pressure.
I wouldn't want it. Yeah, I wouldn't want it. I'd be like, I'll just go and Diocletian style farm my cabbages. You know, thanks. You know, you guys enjoy the court politics. I'm not my business. You know,
it's funny you should take a moment out to say that, because this Li Su, or Li Su,
really does he scheme and plot?
Yes.
What a shock!
He becomes, well, he outlives the first emperor.
Right, right.
And the next little bit of the Qin dynasty is bound up with him.
Right.
And he's sort of an arch. If anyone's holding the sword of Damocles over nearly anyone's head, it's him.
Right, okay. What a surprise. How did I know?
He's arguably, he's sort of the most important figure other than the emperor himself, this Li Su. He becomes, in all but name, the most powerful, other than the emperor himself, the most powerful man in the kingdom. And whilst we're on that, may as well talk about the various assassination attempts on the first emperor. So there's quite a few.
Yeah.
There's sort of three famous ones.
Right.
The first one is before he's even the emperor, while he's still merely the king of the Qin, where an emissary comes to him from one of the neighbouring kingdoms. Apparently they have the head of a rebel Qin general that they brought to him to sort of show their fealty, kind of thing, and a map of the new lands that he can expect to be ruler of now. And as they unroll the map, there's a knife in it, a blade in rolled up in the map, and they try and sort of stab him immediately across the table,
right,
sort of at him. And the story of that is that apparently already the first emperor is kind of paranoid to the point where he doesn't want anyone in his presence to be armed.
Yeah.
So where there's suddenly someone right in front of him now who is armed, he hasn't got loads of soldiers near him to just take him down.
So what does he do?
So he goes to defend himself. He's got apparently a sword at his side, but he gets stuck in the scabbard. And there's a story that one of his doctors sort of tries to throw himself in the way, leap in the way, And there's one point where they're sort of, he puts a pillar between him and the assassin, and they're sort of running around the pillar to get around. And anyway, in the end, he physically bests his assassin.
Right.
But it was really close. Now that plants a seed in his mind that not only do I need to be a bit paranoid about assassins, it's only really prudent to be ultra paranoid about it. Well, it's not paranoid, is well, it? Is paranoia even... is unreasonable yeah, fear. But, it's mean, not unreasonable.
The paranoia of his own court, being like, okay, I can't have anyone in this court armed. Okay, well, that's great. But a foreign emissary or someone, you know, from outside of the kingdom can come in with a knife and try and kill you, and you've got no help. So your paranoia nearly got you killed.
Yeah.
What a terrifying existence these people had.
Well, in the grandest sweep of this guy's life, it's his paranoia that does get him killed.
Right.
Over a long period of time.
Yeah.
But we'll get to what kills him ultimately in the end.
Right.
It's not a violent death, actually. Surprisingly. Yeah. Unbelievably. Almost.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.